Francisco. Welcome, everyone. I will call the Senate Finance and Revenue Committee to order. We have a relatively short agenda today. It's going to get even shorter because we will not be taking up House Bill 2546. And so we will start by opening a public hearing on House Bill 2613. Welcome, Mazza.
Chair Burdick, members of the committee, House Bill 2613 comes to you after through the House and passed for the Senate Committee on General Government. This is a bill that you've heard a similar bill to, or a companion bill in 2612. And those bills have to do with deal with public deposits included in your packets. Also, a letter from the state treasurer about this issue and their neutral position on this issue as to how you establish this program or similar program to the SARS, SDARS, in a way to make the or allow the banks to get deposits in excess of the statutory limit that is specified in Senate and ORS 295.002. And I also included this statute for your review here in the packet, as well as 295.008. And 002 specifies that it's for the when it comes to credit unions, it is what is the limit is what allowed for the insurance insured deposits by the insurance credit union, and for the bank or banking institutions, it is all the ones that are backed by the pool and the securitization pool. This also, you have also in the packet the no revenue impact notice and the fiscal of minimal expenditure impact.
Okie dokie, we have Linda Navarro signed up. You want to come up too, Mr. Martinez? He's got your back.
I'm glad about that.
Welcome.
Thank you. Chair Burdick, members of the committee, my name is Linda Navarro. I'm president and CEO of the Oregon Bankers Association. I appreciate staff's in-depth report on the content of the bill. I'll try to explain how it practically works for banks. Current Oregon law allows a public entity, whether you know, a city or a county or a school district, water district, to utilize a product called CDERS, a Certificate of Deposit Account Registry Service, to deposit funds into CDs, and those funds are usually balances well beyond the current FDIC insurance limit of $250,000, but the product provides a depositor with full protection, full FDIC insurance protection of those deposits, and it does it by reciprocally sending out and receiving back deposits from other community banks around the country that participate and are approved to participate in the program. And, of course, these banks are regulated, and those deposit balances are monitored by regulators. But it provides full FDIC insurance as an alternative to a bank having to collateralize those deposits under the Public Deposit Protection Program, which is expensive for a bank to do. Therefore, the bank is typically able to take those deposits and lend them back out in the local community at a much greater rate than they can when they have to purchase a dollar of securities to pledge against a deposit, particularly when collateral requirements are up where they are now in Oregon at 75% to 110% of every deposit. So it's an important alternative tool that some entities like to use. It's totally their choice. And what this bill does is it opens up the law to allow a new product that has been offered now by the same companies that offer the Cedars-like product. This product is simply a transaction account product. Instead of just having this insurance product available on certificates of deposit, it allows a public entity to access essentially a money market deposit account that's fully insured and is, again, an alternative to having to collateralize under the pool. So while fairly technical and simply opening up to public entities the same product that's available to businesses and individuals, it by doing so, it provides for greater capacity for community banks to retain those deposits and make loans in their communities as opposed to either having to purchase the collateral and tie it up or refuse those deposits because the collateralization requirements make them too expensive to hold. And I'd be happy to answer any questions.
That was a good summary. Questions from the committee? Thank you. Anybody else want to talk on this? Okay, we're going to close the public hearing on House Bill 2613. And can I see expressions of joy or concern from my committee? We will open a work session on House Bill 2613. Senator Morris.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I move House Bill 2613 to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Senator Morris has moved House Bill 2613 to the Senate floor with a due pass recommendation. Any discussion? Any objections? So ordered. I'll carry this bill. Okay, now
Madam Chair, I might just mention that our joy and sadness facial expressions sometimes are the same. So
yes, Senator Telfer, it's reaching that point in the session. Okay, we will now open a public hearing on House Bill 2679. Welcome, Dave.
Chair Werdick, members of the committee, this bill is a very close collaboration of many months between DCBS and Surplus Line Association of Oregon. What it does, it makes sure that Oregon law conform to the new federal law that is going to take effect later in the year. You have some background information on step measure summary. Among the things the bill does is it authorizes the DCBS to enter into a compact or otherwise establish surplus lines premium tax allocation procedures among states, and it imposes surplus lines premium tax and reporting requirements on independently procured insurance policyholders. And it also revises the calculation method of surplus lines fire marshal tax. Now, this bill is revenue-raising. At the bottom of SMS, you will see that currently Oregon surplus lines insurance policies, except for independently procured ones, without the use of Oregon licensed producers, are subject to a 2% premium tax that goes to the general fund, and a tax for the purposes for the purpose of supporting the function of the state fire marshal. The new federal law authorizes states to collect the premium taxes on independently procured surplus lines policies. Under this bill, independently procured surplus lines policies will now be subject to the 2% premium tax and the state fire marshal tax, which makes this bill revenue raising.
It has a very unfortunate relating clause. all right. We will unfortunately narrow. We will call Jim Markey and Teresa Miller.
Good
wants to go first?
Madam Chair, members of the committee, for the record, my name is Teresa Miller. I'm the administrator of the Insurance Division at the Department of Consumer and Business Services, and I appreciate the opportunity to be here today to ask for your support of House Bill 2679A, which would bring Oregon's surplus lines insurance law into alignment with the provisions of the Dodd-Frank Wall Street Reform and Consumer Protection Act that address the surplus lines market. These provisions will become effective on July 21st of this year and are intended to simplify the requirements related to surplus lines insurance by providing a consistent federal regulatory scheme. Surplus lines insurance typically covers those risk exposures that are not traditionally covered by admitted insurers. For example, coverage for amusement park rides or stunt actors. States have established regulations to permit the writing of insurance by non-admitted insurers under certain circumstances, and this insurance market is known as the surplus lines market. Oregon's current surplus lines insurance laws include but are not limited to reporting and tax requirements and financial requirements relating to capital and surplus. Dodd-Frank fundamentally changes the way in which a state can regulate a surplus lines transaction with risk exposures in more than one state. Currently, laws that apply to a surplus lines transaction vary significantly from state to state. When a surplus lines producer or agent writes a multi-state policy, the producer must know the surplus lines law of each of the states where there's an exposure. They must also be licensed in each of those states, file transaction paperwork in each of those states, and allocate the premium and pay the fees and premium taxes due to each of those states. It was really this situation that prompted Congress to include in the Dodd-Frank legislation provisions related to surplus lines. Under Dodd-Frank, the home state of the insured or the policyholder has exclusive authority over surplus lines transactions. The surplus lines producer must only be licensed in the insured's home state. They file transaction paperwork only in the insured's home state, and they pay any fees and premium taxes only to the insured's home state. So only a home state can tax a multi-state policy, but the home state can tax for the liability of all the states where there's exposure. So let's just look at a quick example to see how this works. Let's say we have Joe's Tire Shop that has its principal place of business in Oregon, but has offices throughout the Northwest. Prior to Dodd-Frank, the insurance producer selling this company a surplus lines policy would need to be licensed and file paperwork in each state where there's an exposure and allocate the premium and pay the fees and premium taxes due to each of those states. Under Dodd-Frank, because the tire shop's principal place of business is in Oregon, Oregon would be the home state, so the producer would only be required to be licensed and file paperwork in Oregon, and only Oregon could tax this multi-state policy, but Oregon could tax for the liability of all states where there's an exposure. Dodd-Frank contemplates that each state will adopt nationwide uniform requirements that would facilitate the reporting, the payment, collection, and allocation of premium taxes among the states. Our National Association of Insurance Commissioners, the NAIC, has been working with stakeholders for many months to develop a multi-state agreement that states could join. However, there's no consensus yet on the form and agreement the form that agreement should take, and the NAIC has not completed its work. So House Bill 2679 would authorize DCBS to enter into a compact or otherwise establish procedures with other states to allocate among the states premium taxes paid to Oregon as an insured's home state that also include risk exposures in other states. Dodd-Frank also, as Mr. Beck indicated, authorizes states to collect premium taxes on independently procured surplus lines insurance policies, policies that are purchased directly from a surplus lines insurer rather than through a producer. The bill provides this new authority to Oregon. Because Oregon doesn't currently require that premium taxes be paid on these policies, we don't know how many policies are out there, and we don't know how much these policies would bring into the state in terms of premium tax revenue. Dodd-Frank prohibits states from requiring a surplus lines producer to first determine whether the insurance is available from admitted insurers before writing surplus lines insurance for certain commercial purchasers, as long as the commercial purchaser receives proper disclosures and subsequently requests the surplus lines producer to write the insurance. House Bill 2679 revises Oregon's current diligent search requirements and broadens the federal exemption to include a larger group of commercial purchasers. House Bill 2679 also proposes a few other changes to Oregon's surplus lines laws, including requiring the surplus lines producer to pay a premium tax of 2.3%, with the 0.3% of the tax used to maintain the office of the state fire marshal, and I believe Mr. Marquis will be discussing that issue in a little more detail. Increasing the capital and surplus requirements of surplus lines insurers to be in line with the National Association of Insurance Commissioners Model Act relating to surplus lines, and allowing the Surplus Line Association of Oregon at the request of DCBS to continue to receive and collect on behalf of the state and remit to the state premium taxes for surplus lines insurance as well as independently procured insurance. The Insurance Division has worked very closely with the Surplus Line Association of Oregon to develop this bill and believes that the bill will allow Oregon to take the steps necessary to comply with Dodd-Frank and also provide Oregon with the flexibility down the road to enter into a compact or otherwise establish premium tax allocation procedures among the states on multi-state surplus lines insurance policies. So thank you for the opportunity to be here, and I'll turn it over to Mr. Marquis.
Okay, we'll hold questions till you testify.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the committee. Jim Marquis, representing the Surplus Lines Association of Oregon. Our little association is comprised of about 75 agents, or insurance producers, we call them now, who write this kind of insurance when it's not available in the admitted market. Primarily, our agents do not work directly with the consumer, but rather you would go to a retail insurance producer, retail insurance agent, and he would search for the kind of insurance that you wanted to purchase, and if he couldn't find it in the admitted market, he would call one of our insurance agents who have relationships with companies that are surplus lines companies, the most famous of which is Lloyd's of London, so most people have heard of that. The kind of insurance that we look at in this market could be as simple as a piano player that wants to insure his fingers, and, you know, State Farm doesn't offer that kind of coverage, to Northwest Natural Gas, who routinely buys this kind of coverage because of unusual kinds of liability risks in multi-states. So there's a wide variety of coverages available through surplus lines, and from time to time, admitted carriers just get out of a certain market, and they did that with builder's defect for a while, and it was only available for the most part in the surplus lines area. I wanted to thank the insurance division and Teresa and her staff, because this when Congress enacted the Dodd-Frank bill, we really didn't know exactly what to do, and this was about a six-month process getting through this and making sure that we could find a way to conform the Oregon statutes to the federal requirements of the Dodd-Frank Act, and I think this bill does that in a way that is good for Oregonians and good for the surplus lines marketplace and the insurance marketplace generally. One of the things that Teresa didn't get into great detail about was the change in the fire marshal's tax procedure. We really worked with the fire marshal's office on this and came up with a simplified, streamlined way to tax for the fire marshal functions. The tax was always based on a very complicated formula where you taxed 1% of 100% of fire insurance liability, and then varying percentages of other kinds of coverage, general liability or all that kind of stuff. And what we did was to go back for 10 years, pulled all of the money that had been raised, and really created, figured out that just a 0.3% tax on all surplus line liabilities would be about revenue neutral and simplifies and streamlines the process for everybody, and we think that's an excellent change. Teresa mentioned that the bill is revenue raising, and this is, we believe the bill to be revenue neutral with the single exception of granting Oregon authority to tax independently procured insurance. And this is simply where a multi-state corporation, sometimes a multinational corporation, goes directly to Lloyd's of London or to another European, usually European surplus lines company, and buys coverage without using an Oregon agent or producer. Generally, these kinds of companies, large companies, have an in-house insurance manager type person and simply go directly to the insurance company and purchase the insurance. And for whatever reason, we didn't have authority to tax those kinds of those policies at the same rate that other policies were taxed. We think, as a policy matter, it doesn't make much sense to tax the one and not the other, simply dependent upon whether you went to an agent or not, or purchased the insurance directly. So our estimate is that the Surplus Line Association went out and looked at other states that have that authority, and we think that the impact is pretty minimal, but as a matter of fairness, we still should tax it. Their estimate was that it would bring in as little as $12,000 a year. So it's not a big deal, but it is, I think, important as a matter of fairness. Teresa really covered most everything that I had. I did submit written testimony, which you can go over. And attached to my written testimony is kind of an analysis that I did of the bill outlining the current law as it relates to taxation of multi-state surplus policies, what the Dodd-Frank bill mandates, and then the provisions that we adopted to conform with the Dodd-Frank bill, which, again, are to authorize us to tax the entire policy on multi-state policies and to enter into agreements with other states so that we can give them a share of the taxes when we are the home state, but more importantly, that they can give us our taxes when we're not and they are the home state. The independently procured piece, the compacts, and the Dodd-Frank bill prohibits requiring a diligent search in the admitted market for very, very large corporate kinds of policies. Normally, the retail agent would do a diligent search in the admitted market before he went to the surplus lines market, and we require that by statute because this kind of insurance should be the insurance of last resort, and people should be buying in the admitted market where they can, because it offers a certain higher level of consumer protection in the admitted market. But the Dodd-Frank bill prohibits large corporations, and so we exempted those from the diligent search requirement as required. And then we increased the capital and surplus requirements for surplus lines carriers, and that hadn't been done for a long time, and I think it needed to be done. So the industry and the insurance division worked diligently on this, and we are in agreement. And with that, I'll be happy to answer any questions.
We don't do a lot of insurance law in the Finance and Revenue Committee. The last time we got into this, we really wished we hadn't because it was about the tax credit on the fire.
Madam Chair, I don't have a lot of clients in the insurance industry, and sometimes I get into trouble too. So
forgive this greenhorn question, but can you tell us what it takes to be in the admitted market, what that means, admitted to what, and how that's defined and why it's important?
We have what is called a file-in-use state, a carrier like State Farm would submit an application to the insurance division, and they would outline their financial status and all of the other things required by the division, and we have people here from the division if you want to know exactly what's required. Once approved as an admitted carrier, then they simply file the kind of insurance that they're going to sell, what they're going to charge for it, and they go out and sell it. The surplus lines carriers don't go through that exact same process, but they are required to have capital and surplus requirements that they have to, and they become eligible but not admitted. I know that's a distinction that doesn't sound like it has a difference, but it does. But they are only allowed to sell that insurance when it's not available in the admitted market. And the reason for that is that primarily there is a guarantee fund that protects consumers in the admitted market if an admitted carrier goes out of business or the like. And those protections with the guarantee fund are not available with the surplus lines carrier. So there's a little bit less protection. But most of the policies that get written in this area are written for fairly large, sophisticated corporations that know what they're doing. They just have unusual kinds of liability.
Senator Telfer.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Before I ask the question, I just want to note that Finance and Revenue Committee in the Senate is, I believe, the only committee in the entire legislature that has four, all members are seasoned members of the poll pedal paddle. And we may need some of this surplus lines insurance for our bodies to continue to compete and be competitive. But I believe we're the only committee that is unanimous in that we've all been seasoned pull, pedal, paddle.
Thank you for pointing that out, Senator Chopper, and we won't elaborate on what
Lloyd's of London were. Rings, you know, when I hear that. The question I have, a couple questions, but Teresa, you know, unusual risk exposure, kind of all different with surrounding states. So what have some of the other surrounding states done with respect to legislatively authorizing entrance into these compacts, California, Idaho? I mean, we're all different, and are we all going to play the game, or some play, some don't? I mean, how's that going to happen? And what have they done?
Madam Chair, Senator Telfer, I don't have it in front of me. We may have it here. States are doing different things, and so, you know, quite frankly, when I said in my testimony that we don't know where we are yet, some states have gone one way, some states seem to be going another way, some states are taking the approach we're taking where we're basically saying until states can all figure this out, let's just give the department the ability to enter into some sort of, if it's a compact, it's a compact, if it's some other way of delegating these taxes, then we can do that. So I think we're not all on the same page, which is a problem right now, and that's why we just continue to work with our national association to try to get everybody on the same page, and that's why we figured the maximum flexibility we can have as a state at this point is probably better, just given that we do all need to get on the same page at some point.
Follow up? Thank you, Teresa, for that. But given that, would we be better off to get a little bit more certainty as to what's the best approach to take before you come and ask for a legislative fix to it? I mean, something that's a little bit more concise and condensed as to what we should be doing versus the whole world, go out, do good, and...
Madam Chair, Senator Telfer, and I'll let Jim jump in if he wants. This bill goes into the Dodd-Frank provisions relating to surplus lines go into effect in July. And so I think to the extent states can at least provide the ability to enter into some sort of agreement, states are certainly working through the NAIC very diligently to try to all get on the same page. But because this goes into effect in July, I think we need to have some of these things in place. If this body wanted to do something different in terms of the compact issue, we could certainly talk about that. But I would argue I think the way it is now gives us maximum flexibility to address whatever we can possibly come up with. And I think we need to come up with something. Obviously, some states have done some different things. So, again, if you guys were interested in doing something different, we could certainly look at those options. But I think having something in place sooner rather than later would benefit the state, because if we can all get on the same page now and we have that ability to enter into it before July or right after July, I think that would be preferable.
Want to add anything? Madam Chair, Senator Telfer, I would just add that in terms of taxing the entire policy for all states when we are the home state, I think we need to do that now because in the case of somebody that is domiciled here who writes a 20-state policy, if we don't have that authority, we can't tax it, except for the 2% for the Oregon liability, and that's all the authority we would have. That's going to cost the state some money. Now, this is not, you know, hundreds of millions of dollars, but it, as a policy matter, it would We think that's pretty important to do now. What we did in terms of the compact and or agreement authority was that we used the exact language from the Dodd-Frank bill saying that states would be allowed to enter into compacts or otherwise provide for the sharing of these insurance taxes. And we think that the insurance division is going to need some flexibility because we don't know where this is going, but when it goes there, we're going to have to act pretty quickly to get on board. And I would just say that this whole provision in the Dodd-Frank bill may be one example of just because Congress did it doesn't make it a great idea. But I would prefer that we had stayed in some ways where we were because that system was working, and this does complicate things to some degree. But we just think that the division is going to have this flexibility to move forward.
Well, follow up with Jim. It's going to cost some money, but the fiscal is minimal. I mean, there is no fiscal on this.
It costs money in lost revenue.
No, there would be money in lost revenue if we didn't do something.
Oh, I see what you're saying. I just think we haven't explored all our options, and to say we're giving you permission to enter into a compact is pretty specific, I think. It's a little bit more specific than a lot of flexibility.
Madam Chair, Senator Telfer, actually the language, I think, says enter into a compact or otherwise provide for the sharing of the taxation proceeds.
Well, and I think, I don't know quite what, when I was chair of Judiciary, we did a lot of compact work.
Yes.
And I think if you did enter a compact, that would require legislative approval, wouldn't it,
yes,
to be part of that compact?
Yes, although, Madam Chair, I think that's what you, I don't think we need to come back for that. I think part of this legislation would be you allowing us to enter into that compact. Am I right about that? I think that's correct. So I don't know that we would need to come back. And again, I think as Jim indicated, the problem is under Dodd-Frank, only the home state can tax these policies. And so if we don't have some way to get our money back, I think we are going to lose revenue because we don't have we're more often going to be not the home state.
Right.
So if we don't have a way to transfer those monies back and forth, I think we're no longer going to be able to tax those policies where there's risk here.
So basically under current law, under the current Dodd-Frank, we can tax our home state people plus any policies they have in other states.
Madam Chair, under the current law, the insurance producer who sells the surplus line policy looks at how many states there are coverages in, and it may be 10 states. Let's say Les Schwab, 10 states. They then calculate what percentage of liability is in Oregon, Idaho, Montana, the various states, and what percentage of premium is attributed to each of those states. And then they look at, they tax the Oregon portion for Oregon. They collect the tax for Idaho. They collect the tax for Montana, all that. And then they send it out to all the various states. Yes, they send it to the various states. Now, what Dodd-Frank says is that, and in essence, what we're doing at that point is Idaho has taxed the policy for their share of the liability and premium, and we simply collected it and sent it to them. But what Dodd-Frank says is, no, you can't do that. Only the home state, if it's Les Schwab and they're located here, then we're the home state, and we collect the tax for 10 states or for the entire premium. We tax the thing at the
Oregon. The insurance division collects
yes,
it.
Yes, mm-hmm. The entire premium, and then under these reciprocal agreements, if you will, with other states, we would agree that when we're the home state and we tax that policy, And Idaho is one of the people, we'd have an agreement with Idaho that says we're going to send you your taxes when we're the home state, but you agree you're going to send us your taxes when you're the home state. Well, the reason this becomes so important to Oregon is that very seldom are we the home state. Most often, these things are written somewhere else, and we're just the recipient of taxes charged by somebody else. And that's going to be more and more important as this progresses, because once it's effective, only the home state can tax.
So we'll be bringing less in, and unless we have the ability to enter into some sort of agreement, we won't be able to collect what others have collected that we would have collected prior to Dodd-Frank,
right,
if that makes sense.
So, under Dodd-Frank, so another state that has operations here, they can still collect taxes from here and then they just keep them?
That's right.
Right. Unless we find some agreement.
Yeah, right. So, Madam Chair, that's exactly right. That's why we want to get this passed, because somebody, Texas, is, you know, they have a multi-state policy, or a policy covering 50 states. And they could tax the entire 50 states, and even though it was based on premium attributable to Oregon, liability attributable to Oregon, they just keep the money.
Well, then why on earth would they ever join a compact?
That's a question.
Well, and that's why we're going to be out trying to the National
problem.
Association
yeah.
of Insurance Commissioners
well,
have are trying to do this in a way that will be attractive to many states. I go back to my earlier statement, just because Congress does something doesn't always mean it's a great idea. So we're stuck with this, and unless Congress decides to change it again, and I don't think they're going to. So we think this is the best solution for Oregon at this time, and gives Teresa and her shop the most flexibility to move forward and try to do the best we can.
Hmm. Every time insurance people come, they leave us stumped. Senator Morse.
Just one very quick question. What is the existing general fund tax? It's 2.3% in the bill. What is it today?
Madam Chair, Senator Morse, the tax today is 2% of premium accruing to the general fund. Okay, so it's a 2% tax of total premium to the general fund. And then there's an additional tax to the fire marshal's office, which is calculated under a statutorily defined formula that taxes 1% of 100% of fire liability and 60% of some other. I should have had this with me, and I don't. But it's a complex formula. But if you calculate that complicated formula as simply a percentage of the total premiums written for that year, which we did for the last 10 years, it comes out, the range is from 0.22 to 0.31 in that area, something like that. I don't have it exactly. But We calculated that 0.3 would be just about revenue neutral on that over the last period of three years. And so we think that the 2.3% is revenue neutral as to where we're at in today's world. The only other thing that is there that causes this to be revenue raising is that we've authorized Oregon to collect taxes when a company goes directly to Lloyd's and buys insurance and bypasses our Oregon agent.
And right now they can't do that? They can't collect taxes on those?
Madam Chair, actually we have no authority to collect those taxes. And there have been instances where multinational corporations write a policy that has some Oregon exposure. They buy it directly from Lloyd's. They look at our tax and just send us the money. And I I don't think we've actually sent the money back, but questionable whether we, I mean, we haven't went out and asked anybody for the tax, but this would put it into statute that they have to pay it.
Just as a clarification, the note here from staff, the total premium is approximately $200 million a year. Total tax is about $4 million a year to the general fund and $400,000 per year to the fire marshal. So to put it into perspective.
For the surplus people.
For the surplus line taxes.
Mm-hmm. And this is money that some of it does come in, but they're not required to. Is that what you're saying?
I believe that, Madam Chair, I believe what the staff has handed you is, I'm not sure what they handed you, but I believe they were looking at total premium.
Total premium.
Including people who don't buy it directly.
And I have a sheet here that has a 10-year look at total premiums written, and they range from $76 million in the year 2000 to a high of $320 million in 2006, and in 2009 it was $244 million. So it is in that $200 to $300 million range that we write in a year in total premiums.
Okay, and are the surplus lines people, I hesitate to even ask this question, are they covered by this tax credit that we just spent some time talking about recently? The fire marshal, the tax credit that helps with the fire marshal?
Retaliatory tax.
Retaliatory tax and all that.
Credit.
Lynette, do you want to come up?
I think it is the same thing.
You're going from one distant planet to another.
Yeah.
Well, at least there are other.
Pluto.
Yeah.
At least there are other people who look stumped. Welcome.
Hi, I'm Lynette Hadley. I'm the lead tax analyst for the insurance division. I collect retaliatory tax and fire marshal tax, among other things, and surplus line tax.
Okay, and then so the tax credit, does that have anything to do with the revenue impact on any of this, or
it really doesn't? What the tax, fire marshal tax credit impacts is the excise tax.
Oh, I see.
So it would reduce the excise tax.
Okay, so it has nothing to do with the premium tax.
No.
Okay.
No.
Thank you.
And Madam Chair, I would just add, I admitted carriers. There used to be a premium tax on insurance written in the admitted market, and the legislature changed the taxation method for admitted carriers some years back so that they pay corporate excise tax like everybody else, except surplus line insurance still carries this 2% premium tax, which is consistent with every other state in the union.
And do they, as long as we're on the subject, do they also pay excise tax?
No, I don't believe. I think they pay the premium tax. Is that correct? I don't know the answer to that for sure.
I think it's really state by state.
Okay.
But in Oregon.
In Oregon, yeah, a corporation is supposed to pay excise tax. So if they are a corporation, they would pay excise tax. If they're individual, they would not. They would pay income tax.
Okay, plus the premium tax if they're a surplus carrier.
Right, right.
Okay. Thank you. Any other questions from the committee? Okay. We're going to close the public hearing, and we're going to take this under advisement so we can study a little bit more. I know that all of you will be available if we have questions.
Thank you.
And we'll bring this back. Okay. That completes our agenda for the day. So we are adjourned. So we are adjourned.